It's a wonderful worship. I want to do a couple of sermons on widening the welcome in the church, not just this church, but in the people of God. I'm going to chew a piece of gum. I have a real dry mouth today. I drank just about all my water upstairs, and I'm not doing any better. I've done that before. I'm pretty good at disguising I have gum, but I remember the day I preached a sermon in Martinsburg and spit it out into the church. So since that time, I don't do that trick too much. But I won't make it if I don't have something to quench my thirst, so here I am. If I spit it out at you, you're just going to have to shake your head and say, well, you can dress him up, but you can't take him out. It was some years back, and I was a fairly new pastor in the town, like I am here. And there was another pastor in another denomination and congregation, not very far from me, and she was installed at the exact same time I was. They got a pastor and we got a pastor about this, within a week of each other. And after a while, she approached me and told me that their church was going to be having a father and son banquet. They had one every year. And she wondered if I would be the MC and deliver the inspirational message. Because she said, it's a father and son banquet, and I'm being a woman, I think they'd be more comfortable with a man. Now, looking back over it, I'm not sure she was right, but at the time, I looked at my calendar and I said, you know, I think I can do that, and I agreed that I would. The night of the father and son banquet, I went early so that I could get a little bit of a lay of the land. I hadn't been in the church yet. And I wanted to see where I would be standing and whether all things would be good for my height and whatnot. And when I pulled up at church, I was surprised because there was no less than 10, I'd say, men already there standing in the parking lot having an animated conversation with one another, men and boys, all ages. And so I stopped the car and got out of the car and I waved to them and I said, hello. And I got absolutely no response. No response. Now, in fairness to them, they didn't know who I was. Except that I was wearing a sport jacket and a tie, and none of them had anything like that on. I didn't get the memo that it was casual attire. And so everything about me screamed, this is the guest speaker. They gave me no response. That was all right. And so I remember I turned around and I got into the back seat and I pulled out my guitar and I pulled out my folder of notes. And when I turned around to start walking toward the 10, the parking lot was empty. I mean, they had left me. And I quickly discovered that there was an outside stairwell leading down into the fellowship hall, and they had all decided to go into the building. I didn't get the memo on that either. And so I went over to the stairwell, and what I saw was one by one in a row, they were going down the steps, and the first person to reach the bottom of the steps had manners and held the door open for everybody else. And they went in one by one, me bringing up the rear. When I got to the bottom of the steps and it was my turn to go in, the guy that was holding the door jumped in front of me, went inside the fellowship hall, and closed the door in my face. Hello. I remember later I went to Mary, that's the name of the pastor. I said, what in the heck is wrong with your church? She said, what's the matter? And I told her what happened. Now, I don't need to tell you that were I to go to an Orioles game today, that wouldn't happen. If I were to go to the restroom at the county fair, that wouldn't happen. I went to Totem Pole on Friday night, it didn't happen. In fact, I'm willing to bet you could probably go just about anywhere, and that experience would not happen, and it should not ever happen in a church. But it does, unfortunately. the Apostle Paul said about that to the church. He said, let your love be genuine. Love one another with mutual affection and outdo one another in showing honor. Now, if you take that literally, they literally should have been fighting at the door to be the one to open the door for me. Outdo one another in showing honor. But they weren't. Do not lag in zeal. Be wholehearted in spirit. Serve the Lord. Contribute to the needs of the saints. And practice hospitality to strangers. And if those 10 brothers had taken any part of that teaching seriously, I would have had an entirely different experience. Now, before you think that I'm ragging on the church, I'm willing to bet something. Somebody said to me upstairs after the first service, they said, did they ever apologize to you? No. And do you know why? I don't think they were consciously aware they did it. I don't think it ever entered their minds how they treated a stranger in their midst. Which brings up a point. If we, this 4th Street congregation, want to be a church where Jesus is Lord and everybody is somebody, then we need to be deliberately and consciously making an effort to practice hospitality all of the time. And not just as a church, but as disciples, as individual Christians in our lives, putting hospitality at the forefront of our minds. And God gives us so many opportunities. So many opportunities. This next story did not happen to me, but I'm telling you it could have because I've been in the situation. But it's about a man who was on his way to work in downtown Chicago. It was a January morning. It was bitterly cold and windy, of course, in Chicago. He had taken just enough time to stop in at Starbucks, get himself a cup of coffee for the office, and was on his way, and the light turned red, and he stopped at the intersection, and at that intersection was a woman out in the cold selling newspapers to benefit the city's homeless. I don't know if you've been in the city much, but some cities do that. They have newspapers where they sell those papers, and the money, the proceeds, benefit the seller and the city's homeless. We get into Nashville, Tennessee, because our daughter lives there, and it goes on all the time. It's the first I've ever seen it. Anyway, he stopped at a red light. He has his coffee, bitterly cold, and a woman approaches his car. He winds down the window, and he fishes for his wallet, and he gives her $2. And he tells her, and this is actually generous, keep the paper, you can sell it again. Then he asked her, how are you doing? And she said, I'm so cold. And he said, well, they're calling for it to warm up later in the day. Let's hope it does. Have a nice day. The light turned green. He pulled away. And he was only a block away. And it just hit him. Why didn't I give that woman my coffee? But the amount of traffic and the one-way street made it impossible to turn around. And what happened was God presented a situation to practice hospitality. The opportunity to be the church and to practice hospitality was, in fact, lost. And the thing is, it would have taken so little and would have cost him so little. Most of the time, practicing hospitality, like opening that door, requires so little. It really does. And when I wrote that story for you, I thought of two scriptures immediately. The first is Hebrews 13:2. Hebrews 13:2 says, do not neglect to show kindness to a stranger, because some people who have done that have entertained angels and not known it. Don't hesitate to show kindness, to practice hospitality to somebody you don't know, because you just might be entertaining an angel unaware. You don't know who you're ministering to when you show your welcome, but you do know this. As you do it to the least of these, you do it to Jesus. The second scripture I thought of comes from the book of James, Jesus' brother. James says, if a brother or a sister is naked or lacks food, and you say, go in peace, eat your fill, stay warm, and do nothing to supply the needs of that person, what have you accomplished? You may have great faith, but faith without action means nothing. Now, I've just given you three teachings in that short a period of time about hospitality. I'm about to give you the fourth. Teachings about how to practice widening the welcome of Jesus. And to be honest, our church and the Church of Jesus Christ ought to be the front runner in hospitality. We ought to be able to show totem pole a few things. We ought to be able to set the banner high. But insistently, hospitality is the issue that becomes the stumbling block to discipleship. And I've got to tell you, I don't know why. I've been in the church since the cradle roll. I know I have. And I have led a church for more than half of my life. And I still don't have my fingers on the pulse of why it's so hard for us to be welcoming. Now, I know to welcome a stranger changes the complexion. Every time a new person comes into this group of people, the group of people changes, especially if they stay. And I know that every time a new person comes in, it requires something of me. Like when I was a choir director years ago, and an elderly lady every Sunday was in church, in the back row, in the same pew. She and her husband had sat there. He was dead. But they had sat there for years and years and years. And one day, she was a little late coming. Not a lot late, a little late. It's the back row. Where is a guest going to come? I'm going to sit in the back row. I'm going to be as inconspicuous as possible. And a family came in for the first time visit and sat in her seat. It wasn't very long at all. She came in to sit down in her seat, and there they were, all four of them, sitting where she belonged. She went to the head usher, and she asked the usher if the usher would ask them to move. There were plenty of seats in the church that she could have sat in. The church was only getting about 75 or 100, maybe a little more than that a Sunday. It wasn't like it was jam-packed with 400 in the place, but she said she wanted them to move. And the saddest thing is, he did it. And that family, that visitor, never came back again. There's another chance to be the church, to practice hospitality, and the opportunity is lost. And you think of the things that break the heart of Jesus. Jesus had a lot to say about showing hospitality, and I'm going to try to bring a couple of those things up. But we were in Matthew 10. The girls, the ladies read part of it today, verses 40 to 42. But if you go before that, Jesus takes his church, which are his 12 disciples, and he sends them out into the world with the mantle of his authority. And that's what you have, the mantle of his authority. You are his representatives. He gave them the power to heal the sick. He gave them the power to cast out demons. He even gave them the power to raise the dead. And you might look at me and I might look at you and say, I can't do any of those things. But the fact of the matter is, you have the mantle of authority on Jesus. And there's an awful lot that we can do. And he sent them out. He sent them them out to proclaim his good news. He said, tell them the kingdom of God is at hand, which essentially means tell them God loves you, and tell them that getting help, what you crave, what you need is as close, is as near and now as Jesus himself. That's what he said, sent him to proclaim. And that's exciting. He sent them, and he sends you to, he sent them to the lost sheep of Israel. The people who are desperate, the people who are broken, the lost sheep, the people who are looking, the people who are seeking, the people who are craving, who are vulnerable, who want what they have. And they really have something. And he sent them out to those people. And he sent them without any provisions. You know, you and I packing for a trip, we'd pack a suitcase or two. Don't take anything with you. Your welcome will be welcomed. And if it's not, he said, when you get to a place and they receive you, let your blessing fall on that place. And if they don't receive you, that's okay. Go someplace else. Be a blessing there. But do it. As you do it to the least of these, you do it to me. And then he said something that I think is so noteworthy if we're going to practice hospitality. He said, if any one of you, he's talking to his church, offers even a cup of cold water, something that was a little hard to come by, offers even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones, the least, the vulnerable, the lesser, that's what he meant, truly I tell you, you will have your reward. If you just, it doesn't cost much. Have you ever, maybe yesterday you did if you worked outside, I did, have you ever wanted water so badly, a cup of cold water, a bottle of water, you'd just practically do anything for it? In 1996, Kathy and I took our three children and our little granddaughter to annual conference. It was in Orlando, Florida. It was July. You should never say Florida and July in the same sentence. But that's when annual conference was. Kathy and I have been to Disney World three times in our marriage, and all three times it was in July. When it's hot, humid, and miserable, according to me, okay? And that's what we promised the kids. We would take them to Disney when conference was over. We'd spend 3 days at the resort, and that's what we did. Now, in 1996, the animal kingdom was new, yeah? And the animal kingdom had a feature, and it still does, near the center, the focal point of the kingdom, is this huge tree called the Tree of Life, right? Ethan, you've seen it? You just came back from there. All right, it's still there, isn't it? Okay, at the center of that tree, underneath that tree, is an auditorium. And in 1996, in that auditorium, which was air-conditioned, they were showing a 3D movie called A Bug's Life. Still there? Is it still there? All right. And everybody who had been who was at annual conference, who had already been to Disney, said, you have got to go to the Tree of Life and see A Bug's Life. You got to do that. So when we got to Disney, that was our destination. And I'm telling you, we got out of the car and walked across the parking lot, and I was drenched. I was soaking wet, sweated. And the thing about it is, we had this thought we would just go to the tree and get into the movie. No, the line was incredible. Except Disney is very, very smart. I don't know if you've ever been to Disney, but they do their homework. And they disguise how long the line is. They do that deliberately. They are able to weave you around and wander you around that you don't have a clue how long you're standing in line. Because if you knew you were going to stand in line for 2.5 hours in 98 degrees with the humidity at 98% and the heat indices at 115, you'd be mad. And you'd leave. And your money would say bye. But if you think that if I just wait 15 more minutes, I'm going to be in the air-conditioned door, you endure. And I'm telling you, we thought we would be in that movie, and we get to where we thought we were going to walk in the door, and the line was going someplace else. And we just kept going and going and going. And I'm telling you, people got irritable. I still know what the girls behind me were saying. It's not fit to say in church, but I know exactly. I remember the conversation. The girls were irritable. The crowd was starting to stink. Our little baby, she was about a year old, and it was our granddaughter, and she was in a stroller, and that poor little kid, her hair was just matted wet. She was just drenched in sweat. And all of a sudden, Disney did the unthinkable for Disney. This billion-dollar corporation that seemingly gives nothing away. We rounded a corner, and they're giving away bottles of ice-cold water to everybody standing in line, giving it away. Talk about the sweet hour of prayer. Oh, sweet Jesus. I never had water that tasted so good. I was that dehydrated. And I never had a welcome. Thank you, Mickey Mouse. I never had a welcome so encouraging as that. I was that depleted. Jesus said, church, if you give a cup of water, a bottle of cold water to even one of these, the least of my brothers and sisters. Do you know what his Aramaic turned into Greek? Do you know what the word give a cup of water means? It means if you will irrigate. It's the same word for irrigation. If you will pour into the parched souls the living water of my love and my presence and my help, you will not lose your reward. Whatever it costs you, I will notice it. How do you think Chambersburg Church of the Brethren is doing with our welcome? I'm not going to ask for an answer, but when I was at Penn State and I was a senior in music education, right before we graduated, the professor asked our class, our Methodist class, to evaluate Penn State's music department. And she said, you come in as a freshman, and you got all these great ideas of what we could and should be doing, but it's only when you're a senior have you earned the experience and the right to really give an honest evaluation. Well, you've been here, many of you, every Sunday. A number of you for years. I'm looking at Lois Black for years. You certainly know how our church is doing with its welcome. What are some doors that we open? What are some doors that we close? And for you individually, what opportunity have you had to be the church and practice hospitality? You, when have you been in a Chicago situation? And has there ever been a time where you would have done it differently? What do you think Jesus meant when he said, if you give a cup of cold water, you will not lose your reward? And my last question is, what water does the church have to offer somebody who's here today or here next week for the very first time? So many opportunities to practice and be the church are lost. And it takes so little. I'm going to talk more about this next week. I hope it's in the plans. And we'll look at these questions a little more.